Senate State Affairs Committee come to order, 9 a.m.-ish. I can't, one of these days I'll be able to get the vision to see that clock there. We have members present, Senator Huggins, Stoltz, Vice Chair Coghill, and Senator Wilikowski. We have two matters before us. We have SGR 3, the constitutional amendment related to the Judicial Council, be presented by Senator Kelly, and the, forget the number, but the resolution, the Alaska Native Veterans Monument, which will be presented by Senator Wilikowski. So we'll, does anybody have anything for the good of the order? That, Senator Kelly, you and anybody you'd like to join you? And let the public know, there are folks that have been sending emails and messages in. We've done our, I think we've kept on including, kept up with including all of those in the packet as they, some of them came in as late as late last night. We're just going to have the initial presentation of the bill. This is one that we're going to spend a little bit of time on, and so it's your presentation, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Senator Pete Kelly from District A, and with me is Heather Shattuck, who works in my office, and she will be available to answer questions later on if you need them. Mr. Chairman, we ran this resolution through the process 2 years ago, well, over the last 2 years. So there's been a lot of discussion on this resolution. So at the sake of over-discussing it.
It's been defined by others. This is today, it's your presentation, it's a sponsor. We accord everybody the first meeting to put their interrupted best face that you believe is the most accurate face. It's been one that's been characterized by a lot of others. Why don't you explain what you believe it is and does, and this is for the public's chance to hear from you unfiltered.
Okay, well, I was going to apologize for giving a civics lesson in advance to this committee. Obviously, you're very aware of this. Of this resolution.
This is for the audience listening.
Yeah, and this is for the record. So there's a problem in our Constitution regarding the way we select the members of the judiciary. Currently, it's done through something called the Judicial Council. And I think most people who read through our Constitution kind of skim over the Judicial Council because I've met very few people that actually understand how it works. The Judicial Council selects the nominees that will be forwarded to the governor to become judges. That Judicial Council acts as a gatekeeper for everyone who will inhabit the fourth branch of our government, excuse me, the third branch of our government. Unfortunately, there are two problems in the process, and one of them is that it's almost impossible to meet its own requirements of the Constitution. The Constitution requires that the selection for people on this Judicial Council are made with consideration for regional representation. Unfortunately, there are only six members of the Judicial Council, so that's pretty hard to do in the first place. But in the second place, three of the members are attorneys. Now, most attorneys live in the urban areas. So really what it comes down to is that the public...
Senator, how are those attorneys selected?
Well, they're selected by the Alaska Bar Association. They're not selected in any way by the people, nor are they selected by the people's representatives, nor are they confirmed by the people's representatives, nor are they selected by the governor. They are completely the choosing of a guild, the Alaska Bar Association. And because they're limited, and this is no criticism of the people in the Bar Association, by the way, what I found out about this Bar Association, this is one of the tougher boards to be on. There's a lot of work involved, and the people who are on it serve for long terms, and they do their homework. I'll give them credit for that. And they're sincere people, and I think that's what we all discover over time, is the people that we often oppose are very sincere and hardworking and loyal Alaskans. But the problem is that it is a selection of three people by the Alaska Bar Association with no input from the public whatsoever. Now, as I said, they do the best they can, but mostly what you're going to find are attorneys that come from the rail belt, because most attorneys don't practice in rural Alaska because the communities are too small. So there you've limited your ability to choose representatives from regionally as the Constitution mandates. So that leaves you with the three public members. And over time, the three public members, there has only been, Heather, is it two? Two people who have come from rural Alaska. One was in 1987, and that person came from Barrow. And then you have to go all the way back to 1961, and that person was selected from Kotzebue. So what we have is a track record of the Judicial Council coming from urban Alaska with almost no representation from the smaller communities of rural Alaska. Now, there are some attorney members who have come from southeast, but mostly it's Anchorage and Fairbanks and Ketchikan. The other problem is that in a six-person board, there are ties. And the tiebreaker in this council is the Supreme Court Justice, and Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And that person obviously has to be a lawyer, a member of the Alaskan Bar. So what you have essentially are four Alaska Bar Association members, chosen completely outside public review or consent, and then three members of the public. Now, they choose from members who are nominated, and they forward their names on to the governor for selection. Oftentimes, in history, when they've come to a tie, the Supreme Court justice has come into the to be the tiebreaker, and sided with the public members, which is a very honorable thing to do, and I think they should probably do that all the time, and we should be able to trust them to do that all the time. However, as much as you are going to hear over the process of this bill that this is a non-issue, that it never happens, that only a tiny percentage of the time over our state's history has there been a tie where the Supreme Court Justice has a tie between the attorneys and the non-attorneys. That's important. That only a number of times has the Supreme Court Justice sided with the attorneys and not voted to forward a name on to the governor. That is true. Unfortunately, it isn't so true anymore. There have been six attorney-non-attorney splits since June of 2012. And each time, the Supreme Court Justice has sided with the attorney members and voted not to forward the name on to the governor. That's a little disturbing for two reasons. One is, why all of a sudden is this happening? And second of all, what's the problem with sending a name on to the governor? That's really all they're voting. So what they're doing is they're acting as quite aggressive gatekeepers here about who gets to go for the selection process, because they can send multiple names and the governor will choose, the governor who is an elected person. So we heard testimony over the last couple of years, one person who called in from out of state, lives in California, is a member of the Alaska Bar Association, votes for those who will serve on the Judicial Council. He was saying that this is a crazy system, that we have put one of our branches of government into the hands of a guild. Now, what he said is true, I believe, but it was also, I thought, very interesting that he was calling from California. He doesn't live here anymore, but he still gets the little sheets to vote on who gets to be on the Judicial Council. I want to read a little something, if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Please. Again, this is, Senator, this is your uninterrupted presentation.
Okay. Thank you.
Which is minor interruptions, as I...
This is from Vic Fisher's book. And what he's quoting
He has written a couple of books.
This is on, specifically on the Constitutional Convention. And what he's quoting are the words of the consultants that were hired by the Constitutional Convention. By the way, some of the quotes in here that are all would be in support of what we're trying to accomplish here came from Senator Coghill's father when he was on the a member of the Constitutional Convention as well. They hired consultants. Well, that was a tough one. They hired these consultants, and the consultants were examining what was called the Missouri Plan. Now, when you hear the word Missouri Plan, that's a little bit of propaganda going on, because that originally came from the American Bar Association. So it was the American Bar Association plan that later became known as the Missouri Plan. But he was talking about the Missouri Plan, and he says, these sections in particular, however, go a long way toward withdrawing the judicial branch from the control of the people of this state and placing it under that of an organized bar. No state constitution has ever gone this far in placing one of the branches of government beyond the reach of democratic controls. We feel that in its desire to preserve the integrity of the courts, the convention has gone farther than is necessary or safe in putting them in the hands of a private professional group, however public-spirited that group may be. So they were warned by their own consultants. And this is not a time necessarily to bash on attorneys. That's not my point at all here. But what you have was this judicial committee that was formed for the Constitutional Convention. They were supposed to create the judicial branch, essentially. And they were mostly lawyers. 5 out of 7 were lawyers. And they completely disregarded the advice of the consultants to the Constitution. There's a bit of a fight about this, but it was not allowed by the chairman to even bring it to the floor, the chairman who also was an attorney. So what it starts to kind of smell like is that the attorneys have created their own judicial system. And we're seeing the problems that result from that now in these tie votes, where the people are saying, no, we want this guy or this woman, their name to be forwarded to the governor, and the attorney saying no, and then another attorney coming in and saying, I'm going to side with the attorney. So we're being a little bit ganged up on as a people. Now, the other problem that I mentioned earlier is that they don't go through confirmation. Now, if you're a public member, if you're some schmo and the governor calls you up and says, hey, would you like to be on the Judicial Council? And you say, sure. Well, guess what? You're going to have to go through the tough little ringer that we put people through down here through the confirmation process. But somehow, the attorneys get a pass. You don't have to go through that. There was a Missouri law review. It's in my packet here. I'm not going to dig too deep for the quotes, but essentially, in describing it, they split up what were called elitist states versus non-elitist states, and that's the word that was used. No, it was used because they thought it was very fair to call Alaska an elitist state in this matter, because somehow members of the bar don't have to go through the democratic process. So, as I said, the Supreme Court justice comes in. So, excuse me, let me just put a comma on that. I see three problems here. One is you can't get the very requirements that the Constitution requires. It says, and I'll just read briefly, Mr. Chairman, appointments shall be made to this Judicial Council. Appointments shall be made with due consideration to area representation and without regard to political affiliation. Okay, you almost can't do that with only three members that you're appointing from the public. Second of all, what do you do when you have these splits between the attorney and the non-attorney members, you have the Chief Justice comes in, and the Chief Justice is put in a position of a conflict because they're choosing, potentially choosing, their next colleague. And I know the current Chief Justice, and I think she's an incredibly honorable woman. I'm not sure, I didn't look behind me if the former Chief Justice is here, but he's an honorable guy, there's no question about that. But the point is that those thoughts have to be going through their head. They've got cases in the docket. They cannot help but be thinking about what this future person on the Supreme Court, how it's going to impact the way they do business. They're just human beings, though I think some of the testimony that I have heard over the last couple of years, you would think that they are ascended beings, that somehow they're beyond all of this conflicts and those kinds of things. So I don't like the fact that we put our Supreme Court Justice Chief in a potential conflict. And third, and I think most important, what's up with not confirming these people? I mean, seriously. If you are going to be a member of just about any board in this state, if it has any kind of quasi-judicial powers, or regulatory power, you're going to go through confirmation. That's just the deal. And I hate to use them as an example.
But so you're saying you want the Judicial Council to have the same high standards, tattooists and body piercers?
Precisely. I mean, it is a good example because I don't think that when you talk about all these boards, whether they're medical or whether they're barbers and hairdressers or tattooists, they have to go through legislative confirmation.
Tattoo artists, I don't want to be offensive.
We've said that these people get to regulate their profession. We draw on their experience and their insights, and that's a good thing. So we pull from that community, and then we confirm them. There's nothing wrong with us pulling from the legal community and then confirming them. So that's what the bill does. Really, it does two things with the result of a third. One is it adds members so that we can draw more members from different regions. It adds three public members. It requires confirmation. And then third is it removes the Supreme Court Chief Justice from a conflict because it would be almost impossible, it would be numerically impossible for them to be only siding with the attorneys if there's a split. If there's a split between the attorneys and the non-attorneys, numerically it would be impossible actually that they would be only on the side of attorneys. Whatever side they chose, there would have to be some public members on that side. So it achieves those three things. And that's it, Mr. Chairman. If I could just ask Heather Shattuck, would you explain the quorum?
Yes. So the other piece.
Would you please introduce yourself?
Absolutely,
for the record.
Mr. Chairman. For the record, Heather Shattuck, staff to Senator Pete Kelly. So on page 2 of our bill, starting on line 2, it states that the Judicial Council shall act by a majority vote of a quorum of at least 7 members and according to the rules which it adopts. We struggled a bit with coming up with this piece, so we just wanted to explain it. Right now, the Judicial Council has 6 regular voting members, so they have to act by 4 or more. 4 would be a simple majority of 6, so that was the concept we went. However, we wanted the quorum to be set higher than the number of public members, so that way there was no way only the public members could come in with their 6 members and conduct business on the Judicial Council. We wanted to make sure that the attorneys were there at the table having a say. So that was why we set the quorum at least 7 and just went with a simple majority vote of that, which is the standard that the Judicial Council uses now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee for Senator Kelly and or staff? Senator, I want to thank you for presenting the bill yourself. I'm going to invite members of the Supreme Court, the the voter confirmed members to testify. I appreciate that you walked your own dog here, and I have a and I would expect that the Supreme Court members would come and defend their status quo, that that they are very aggressively stating a position on, and I'm going to be somewhat reticent to have staff testifying when the when the true opposition, the elected members who I'm going to put this, I think they monitor these, and their staff is here. Invite all five members or their designee among their membership to publicly defend their position, just as you have on your bill. I wouldn't we have the expectation to sponsor the bill, and I think the major opposition, which the Supreme Court has staked this as a very public opposition. I'm going to really weigh whether or not we'll allow them to send emissaries and not state their own position, Senator. And I think that's my position right now. That I think you have similar expectations for folks too that are opposing or defending a bill to speak on their own behalf.
Thank you, Mr.
We will set this bill aside. We've noted everybody here that signed up watching the bill right now. We will personally contact those folks. We have the contacts and let them know when we'll have the public testimony portion of that bill. But, as it is with many of our bills, from marijuana to other bills, we've given a lot of deference to the either the citizen sponsors or the actual sponsors to present their bills, especially when it's a publicized high-profile issue. So we will set this aside and just take a brief at ease. State Affairs, come back to order. We've set aside Senate Joint Resolution 3. We will we'll make sure everybody there that was monitoring the first hearing is notified on all future hearings, and we will make an extra effort beyond a public broadcast. We'll do individual contacts to the greatest ability we have. We have before us today Senate Joint Resolution 7, sponsored by one of our members, Senator Wilikowski. You want to do the brief introduction, then turn it over?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, Senate Joint Resolution, actually was an idea that someone approached me during a Vietnam Veterans of America conference a couple of years ago. They asked me. This is a nationwide effort to try to get an American Indian Veterans Memorial in the nation's capital. There, I said a few years ago that I would do it. We sponsored this same resolution, a very similar one, a couple of years ago. It passed the Senate, and unfortunately, time ran out, and we didn't get it through the House. But there was really no controversy when it passed. It passed unanimously, and it's simply an effort to recognize the tremendous efforts and the legacy of the Native Americans and Native Alaskans. And Mr. Chairman, there's no cost. It won't cost the taxpayers of the state or the country any money at all. For the specifics, I would request to turn it over to my staffer, Calissa, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
For the record, my name is Calissa Maley. I'm staff to Senator Wilikowski. Construction of an Alaska Native and American Indian Veterans Memorial would secure formal recognition for generations of Alaska Native and American Indian military veterans who have not been recognized in our nation's capital. 1994, Congress passed the first incarnate kind of moving towards this. It was the Native American Veterans Memorial Establishment Act, allowing for a memorial to be built in our nation's capital. Since that time, support has been growing. In December of 2013, we passed an amended version of that. It just needed a couple of tweaks. But the idea was the same. It still does not require federal or state funds to be expended to pay for it. It's all private donations. The National Museum of the American Indian, the National Congress of the American Indian, and the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund have all been authorized to fundraise for this project. So this, again, isn't going to cost the nation anything. We just get the benefit of recognizing these heroic men and women who've served for generations, even before American Indians and Alaska Natives were recognized as citizens of the United States. They were fighting to defend this nation. That is something that's in the resolution. We thought it was very important to add. We should acknowledge that the three servicemen statute on at the Vietnam Memorial goes a long way to honoring the diversity of American veterans, but it doesn't include an American Indian or Alaska Native. And given Alaska's history, but also the history of this nation, we think that we can go a step further to recognize that. Are there any questions?
Questions? And I fail to acknowledge Senator McGuire joined us. She's a victim of incredible multitasking. It's only going to get busier too, Senator McGuire. Well, welcome. Any questions for Senator Wilikowski and or his staff?
For me, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill.
I think I remember hearing this some, but one of the questions I can't remember is other states have put up resolutions like this, and how do we fit in that number?
So we would be the first state to pass a resolution. There have been numerous organizations. Florida is working on a draft of one right now. The organization that we've worked with, who's kind of spearheading it, is based out of Florida.
Okay. All right. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And at this point, I know there's a very good American Indian display on the mall, or just off the mall, actually, in Washington, D.C. Are they part of the same group?
So they're the two congressional authorizations in 1994 and then again in 2013 authorized first inside the National Museum of the American Indian and then outside of it. That was the change. So yes, they are very much connected. This organization has also been working with the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund to work on a project kind of simultaneously, same spirit, at the Vietnam Memorial or adjacent to it as well. Our resolution is neutral on the location. We just support recognizing these men and women.
So I must have misunderstood. Other states must have introduced this, but we would be the first state if it passed?
Yes. So the 1994 bill on the House side, Congressman Young was a sponsor of that bill. Senator Stevens and Frank Murkowski sponsored the Senate bill, which didn't ultimately pass. And then we saw that again with the 2013 update. Our congressional delegation was in full support of it.
So I meant, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I probably didn't make myself very clear. Have other states passed a resolution in favor of this?
Not yet. Okay. We're leading the charge on this one.
We would be the lead. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm just, I'd probably defer to Colonel Huggins. It seems like there is a Native American, one of our most iconic World War II statuaries, and that's raising the flag. It was Native American. Is that correct, Senator Huggins?
It would be right.
And it's done without designation. A Native American is on there, but just treated as an American. But, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and thanks, Cliff, and thanks, Senator Wilikowski. You know, we're lucky as a state. I mean, 2/3 of our congressional delegation are veterans. Congressman Young and our illustrious Senator Sullivan, who we're proud of both of them. Have we approached them on this since we have a supermajority in our delegation?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we have all of, this project has all of the approval that it needs to go forward. They're currently in the fundraising stage. This issue hasn't come before Senator Sullivan because it was addressed in the previous Congress most recently, but
they've definitely shown their support for it.
Senator Wilikowski, you want to talk about the outreach you are, have done or planning to do?
We're happy to work with the congressional delegation. We've worked with Senator Murkowski and Senator Begich and Representative Young in the past, so we'll certainly reach out to all of them.
Okay. It sounds like there has been discussion, so it's, I think that was, I wanted to make sure, I suspected you would provide more a lucid description of what actually has happened. So I'm glad.
Yeah, I think, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Sullivan is in town today, and so I would be more than happy to be part of a conversation with him to support the effort. So,
okay.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? You're excused. I see we're very honored. Southeast Alaska communities and families probably paid a higher price by per capita than just other than even many areas of the country, and it's. I suspect that those the three gentlemen that are signed up are representing some of those communities and values, and I'm really honored that they're here. But, I've been amazed when I've read the amount of volunteerism and the sacrifices of Southeast Alaska communities that rivals anywhere in the country and exceeds contributions. So, but I don't want to steal their thunder. But whichever one of you three would like to come up first, or if you'd like to come up together, defer to what, however you'd like to organize. Welcome.
Thank you for listening to us. I'm Marcelo Quinto. I'm the president of Alaska Native Brotherhood, Camp 70 here in Juneau. I'd like to know that I did serve in the United States Navy for 4 years, from 1960 to 1964, and I've been very proud to do so. When I didn't have any written statement, I was told last night that they asked me to come up and testify, and I certainly was happy to, because I believe that it's certainly time that our Alaska Natives are recognized, you know, in the capital for their efforts. You know, when you go back all the way back to the Eskimo Scouts, you know, during World War II, and you take a look at the number of Native, you know, Alaska Natives volunteered for the services. You know, I can remember as a young man the number of our men who went off to the Korean War and served and came back, and then. You know, it wasn't long after that I joined the Navy in 1960. You know, and so we've had our people volunteering and serving proudly for years. And if to be noted that almost every Native Alaska Native that came back has always been very proud, you know, to wear the uniform and to wear, you know, the caps that signify that they had served for the years, you know, both in combat and out of combat. And I'm happy to see that they're finally taking the initiative to show that, you know, we did stand up when the country needed us, you know. And I hope that you guys will support it also. Thank you.
And Mr. Quinto, you served a little bit before our mutual friend Fish and Game Commissioner Cotton, but you did combat duty together at Xerox, right? Inside stuff. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is William Martin. I'm former president of the Alaska Native Brotherhood Grand Camp and currently the chair of the legislative committee for the same Grand Camp. We're pleased and honored that this resolution is being brought forward to honor the Native Americans and Alaska Natives that have served in the military from as far back as the Revolutionary War, when there were, of course, on both sides. But our people, Native Americans, are basically a peaceful people until we feel like our families are threatened. And then we become like mother bears. And for that reason, we have always been first and foremost in enlisting in the military whenever it was needed throughout history. Even when we were not allowed the privilege of voting, we were fighting. fighting in the war, the First World War. It wasn't until the 1920s that we were granted the privilege to vote. And so we've always been there, not so much because we're wanting to see action, so to speak, but because we want to protect our families. And so we're honored that this resolution being put forward, and also let you know that our tribal assembly meets in April, and we too will be submitting a resolution so that in supporting this bill to have recognition for the Native Americans that have served in the war. The person you mentioned about the person that raised the flag at Iwo Jima, I've been privileged to see that monument many times in Washington, D.C., and the young man's name was Ira Hayes. He was a Pima Indian from Arizona, and just happened to be at the right place at the right time. But we, as his fellow Native Americans, take pride in the fact that his sculpture is there, and he's the one that, as the flag is being put up, his hand is outstretched, it's just having let go of the flag. And so I'm here to ask your support in this resolution. I know it's been stated that no race should be honored more than the others, but we have made tremendous contributions, including the Code Talkers. You know, the Navajo has been honored so many times because of their part in it, because there was more of them. But Alaska Tlinkets also have been Code Talkers. My clan brother, Mark Jacob Jr., was one of them, along with his natural brother. And he served in the Navy, and both of them did. And they were able to have their own code that they could talk back and forth when they were shelling some of the islands during the Second World War. And it was a code that never ever could be broken, because we were on this side in our own language. And even that was broken down into other codes, so that if they just happened to be a captured person, while they know the words, they couldn't necessarily equate them to the words that were being presented. And so it is a great honor, and because we are honored, and thank you very much for presenting this resolution. It makes us feel with pride. I myself, unfortunately, didn't serve in the military. I just couldn't pass the physical. But my brother did serve as a captain during the Vietnam era, and our family is very proud of him for what he has done and his accomplishments, as we are with all of our relatives. Some that didn't make it back, we honor every year. You'll hear from the Native veterans after us, and they hold great pride because they still march to that same drum. They still hold a pride inside themselves that they have contributed to this country's greatness. And it's with people like yourselves who are here and give yourselves to the people that we're grateful for this opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Be happy to answer any questions if you have.
Any questions for either Mr. Quinto or Mr. Martin?
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr.
Third gentleman, your writing is similar to mine, so I can't read it, but you can identify yourself when you come up. Welcome, sir.
Hi, my name is William Ozzie Shakely. I'm the current commander of Southeast Alaska Native Veterans. We organized ourselves in 1995 here in Juneau during the convention that Bill talked about, mainly to help honor our own veterans that are, well, most of our veterans, like you said, joined, but and never had the benefits that they were eligible for. So we decided that we needed to try and go help them ourselves, and we go out to the villages. The Veterans Administration, the main office is in Anchorage, and they don't have any travel money to travel their villages, so we can do a lot of that ourselves, helping our veterans to sign up for the benefits they earned. And a couple of you guys already talked about what I was going to talk about too, is the Code Talkers and how much we enrolled. But to add on to the Code Talker part though is we got a call from U.S. Mint, I think about 5 years ago, and they told us they had some Tlinkit Code Talkers. And They didn't tell us who they were. They just asked us to help design the Code Talker medal, and we did that. And we have five Code Talkers in addition to Bill's uncles from Southeast Alaska. They were able to go down there to pick those up, and like Bill mentioned, they were all the codes were broken during World War II. And except the Indian language, which helped shorten the war, it looked like, because when the codes were broken, they knew where people were. When they couldn't break the codes, then that's when we had a lot of help from the military to get their men to the beaches.
You think you'd be able to provide the name? It'd be nice to be able to recognize those Code Talkers when
the Code Talkers
in a larger audience when it's bill is presented on the floor.
I have the medal. I forgot to bring it. I was going to show you it too. We were allowed to bring the medal up here. We presented families with Mark Jacobs Jr. His family, they're all gone now. His brother Harvey Jacobs from Sitka, George Lewis from Haines. Jeff David from Haines, Richard Bean from Juneau, one of the five co-talkers at the Veterans Administration that identified for us. They're the ones that identified it for us. And
if you just make sure you work with Senator Willikowski's office, so it's when he presents this, it would be certainly appropriate to honor those folks. I don't think he'd be a hard sell to do that.
I think I think that was a major part of the turning point of the war with the Code Talkers. They had a hard battle in World War II, especially since we organized in 1995, we talked to a lot of our veterans, and most of them are gone now from World War II.
And Hollywood get it right when they showed it in movies, you think?
In fact, I listened to some of the stories that, yeah, they did, and I told the guys that, boy, we could make a movie here too, with all the stories they told us. And all the guys I've talked to myself, only one of them in World War II said that there was no shooting when they landed. Everyone else was hit hard. That was in Italy. He said there was no near gunshot there. But all the other guys had some stories to tell us. And they served proudly, like Bill said. Well, I'm here mainly to support the resolution that you're introducing, and I know Alaska did some support for the veterans already too, and thank you guys for that. We're still working on DC to help support us on that. But I'm here just to, like I said, to support your resolution for the American Indian Monument and recognize the people that did make a big difference in the wars. Thank you very much.
I ran into my good friend Bill Thomas last night, and although he's not serving, he is still very active and concerned about recognizing veterans. So that was one of the things, other than that and resource development and creating jobs in Southeast, but veterans' concerns. And
he went down with me to pick up the Code Talker Medal of Honor. I got to see him down there.
He is still serving that mission as a private citizen.
Yes.
Any other questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. If I could have the liberty of just telling a war story.
You have all the liberty.
I'll leave that. Yeah, so, you know, my first real contact with a person that I knew was an Alaska Native was Fort Bragg, North Carolina, in mid-70s. And his name was Eli. I remember very well. He was actually a corporal fire team leader in an infantry squad, which is part of the platoon, which is part of a company, and I was a company commander. And, you know, he was a good parachutist. But, you know, he was one of those guys, and I'll lead up to the end of this here in a moment, that, you know, it wasn't about where he was from or, you know, what his hobbies were or his lifestyle. It was about his pride in serving his country. And I'll never forget that. And then the second part of that, though, is right down the street at McDonald's. This was probably 20 years ago. I was sitting there, and there was a gentleman off to my right, and he had, you know, some clothing on that identified him as a veteran, so he and I were drinking coffee together. And he shared with me in the 50s, when he was a veteran in the Army, that he had been shipped to Fort Rich and then subsequently shipped to Japan, and this was during the Korean War, the beginning of the Korean War. So when he got to Korea, the first sergeant was talking to him. He says, he looked through his, I don't remember his name, but looked through his records and said, well, you know, I got to ship you back home. You haven't been to basic training. And he said, well, first sergeant, you know, I've lived a lifestyle that's, you know, has lots of training that things we got to do over in Korea. I didn't come all the way to Japan to get shipped back to Alaska because I didn't go to basic training. So, you know, that's the good news. The bad news was, you know, even though he came from a cooler climate here in Southeast, I think he was from Hunan, you know, he had some difficulties in Korea and he got frostbite. But he was explaining how his experience in Korea and how difficult it was, great pride and, you know, and his experience and his service to his country. And, Mr. Chairman, if I might, just in summation, though, that, you know, the beauty, this is me talking, the beauty of, in the Army, of being in combat where things were really happening and people were shooting, throwing hand grenades, whatever the case may be, the identity of where you're from, what you look like, and what your last name spelling is just goes away. It's all about who will stand up, take the bunker. Mm-hmm. And Native Americans are great at that. So thank you.
I just thought of another person like you talked about. We had a guy in Hunan too. I'm from Hunan originally. He went in kind of late during the training when they were ready to go to overseas already. And everybody in Southeast Alaska are hunters. So they asked him if he could shoot. He said, I can shoot. They made him a sniper in World War II. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We have one person online, David Stephen Bowers from the good Hollywood, Hollywood, Florida.
Yes, sir.
Welcome. Identify yourself and please provide any comments you wish.
My name is David Stephen Bowers. I'm a Seminole Indian, a member of the Seminole Tribe of Florida here in Hollywood, Florida. And I work for the chairman of the Seminole Tribe, James Billy. But I've been working on this project since 2010 at the request of my previous chairman, Mitchell Cypress. And we've been working very hard since around 2010. We finally started traveling and meeting different Indian organizations in 2011. Our very first meeting was in 2011 around April in Milwaukee, Wisconsin with the National Congress of American Indians when we first presented our resolution about American Indian Veteran Memorial Initiative, which initially was to put an American Indian, Alaskan Native Veteran Memorial near the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C. We subsequently found out that in 2003, Congress had passed a law saying no more monuments, no more statues, no more memorials would be allowed above ground anywhere on the National Mall. So now, in December of 2013, the United States Congress approved a resolution, approved a bill to have an American Indian, Alaskan Native veteran statue to be put at the National Museum of the American Indian. And it would be, there were two amendments made to that bill. One was that the statue would be outside of the building at the museum, and it would be, the fundraising for that statue would be accomplished by the National Museum of the American Indian. So that kind of established the statue that we were working on in the first place. We wanted to have the statue put closer to the Vietnam Wall because that was where all of the rest of the men and women who died in Vietnam, their recognition was at the wall, and we wanted our American Indian, Alaska Native veteran statue to be located in that area. But since the law was passed in 2003 to prohibit any more statues, then our mission was accomplished. Our statue is going to be on the National Mall, not necessarily where a lot of our lower 48 veterans wanted it to be, but it is a statue and it is a recognition of our service and sacrifices by many of our Indian veterans in Vietnam. But we had broadened our scope to include all of the wars that the American Indian Alaska Native has participated. And we've been going to the Alaskan Federation of Natives Conference for the past 3 years. I believe it was our first year we had a chance meeting with an Alaskan Native who had a relative that served with the Alaskan Territorial Guard. And this was a fascinating history that I learned over the last 2 or 3 years. We've been attending Alaskan Federation of Natives conferences for the past 3 years. We hope to go back again this year. We've been gathering information from different attendees of the Alaskan Federation of Natives conference who has passed on books to us. We've received DVDs about the Alaskan Territorial Guard. And aside from many of the Alaskan Native that have served in World War One and Two in Korea and Vietnam, my wife and I, Elizabeth, felt like this was just an awesome piece of history that the Alaskan Territorial Guard were involved in, that hardly any of the lower 48 population, much less the Indian tribes here in the lower 48, have never heard about the Alaskan Territorial Guard. So we want to recognize the American Indian, Alaskan Native, and the Pacific Islanders for what their service and their sacrifice since the Revolutionary War. We know of a lot of our Indian tribes here in the U.S. have fought in the Revolutionary War. We've had tribes that's fought in the War of 1812. Just about in every conflict or war that the United States has been in, there's been Indian people that have served voluntarily, because we all believe that this is still our land. We want to fight for it just like the rest of the U.S. citizens would fight. So we would like to, we are presenting this resolution merely to receive support of our efforts, and also hopefully we will have some fundraising opportunities towards our American Indian Veterans exhibit inside the new education center at the wall. This is a facility that's been approved by Congress, and it is it's already received a place, a location for that education center. And one thing that's very unique about this center is that it will be built underground, which will satisfy the law that Congress had passed in 2003. That there would be no facilities, no monuments above ground. So Jan Scruggs, the founder of the Vietnam Veteran Memorial Fund, whom we are working with to help raise money, but also we're working with him and also working with Indian tribes and Alaskan Natives throughout the country to make sure that we have some type of recognition inside the new education center. Now this education center, it's still raising funds. It does not hope to break ground for this facility until at least late 2017 or 2018, or whenever we have raised $85 million more. In the past year, since we received the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, received the approval from Congress, they have been working with the National Park Service about the facility. They have received approvals for all the construction, for all the drawings that VVMF has submitted to the National Park Service, and to all the other commissions that have to be involved with any building or any structure that is put on the National Mall. And we are now in a fundraising mode, but also myself and my wife are still out traveling the country to educate other Indian tribes that have a really strong veteran legacy of their tribe participating in various wars that the United States has been involved in. And we are planning now to attend the National Indian Gaming Association to alert all of the tribes that have casinos and resorts to make them aware of this opportunity where their history, their Pacific history, I heard you mention about the Navajo Nation being recognized for their code talkers, but in 2013, Congress recognized 32 other Indian tribes, which were mainly located in Oklahoma, for their participation as code talkers during World War II. It's a piece of history that no one hardly knows about, that was maybe got one little item in the paper in the Washington Post and maybe other Indian newspapers, but is not a well-known topic as the Navajo code talkers are. And we are strongly advocating for the education center to our Indian tribes, and also specifically to the tribe that have casinos and resorts, to make a financial contribution towards the structure of the education center at the wall. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir, for providing the breadth of additional testimony.
Could you speak up a little bit? I'm at a little bit of
okay.
A,
I just said thank you.
Suffering from a cold, and my head is all stuffed up, and I can't hardly hear well.
Thank you very much for providing the breadth of testimony about what's going on in the rest of the country. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Senator Huggins?
Yeah, Mr. Bowers, you're in Hollywood, right, Florida?
Yes, sir. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah. It's Charlie Huggins here. I may be the only person on this committee that was born and raised in Florida, so... but you know, number one, thanks for your testimony, and you know, I would call it an honorary Seminole for 4 years, and since then, as I was went to Florida State Fighting Seminole. So,
my chairman says if you go to Florida State and you graduated, then you are a Seminole.
Okay. Well, thanks, and
in honorary, you're a Seminole. You can't build a house on a reservation, and my chairman of the tribe says, James Billy, he says, anyone who went to Florida State and graduates is a Seminole. So,
yeah, thank you, Mr. Bowers, and we're going to query you to get your address. We won't go into that right now, but we will send you a memento of the Alaska Territorial Guard, and thanks for your support. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I really wasn't looking for a memento. I'd like to have a financial contribution, really, but...
one step at a time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Bowers. Mr. Davidge, are you online?
Yes, this is Rick Davidge.
Please, you know the drill, sir, and then go ahead and identify yourself. And.
This is Rick Davidge, Director of Legislative Affairs for Vietnam Veterans of America, Alaska, and former National Chairman of Government Affairs for Vietnam Veterans of America. proposal first came to us in Washington, D.C. while I was serving as chairman of Legislative Affairs, and initially it was brought to us as a concern with respect to the lack of representation of this community in relationship to the Vietnam veteran. But since that, and that's what I think 3 or 4 years ago now, there's been a lot of work done, and in the course of the research that we did on this, I discovered, I was unaware of it, but American Native people, including Alaskan Natives, consistently are overrepresented in the conflicts that America gets involved with, as the gentleman has said, all the way back to the Revolutionary War. And there hasn't been a recognition of that service, and the service is not only extraordinary with respect to the overrepresentation of American Natives, Hawaiian Natives, and Alaskan Natives, but also some of the cultural and unique things that these folks have been able to contribute to assist in America prevailing, such as the Code Talkers. We're delighted nationally to support this, and I'm delighted with the sponsors bringing this joint resolution forward. And I want to let you know that on behalf of the Vietnam veterans in Alaska, we support this absolutely and continue to be involved in assisting and raising funds nationally for this project.
Thank you, Mr. Davidge. Any questions for Mr. Davidge? Thank you. Is there anybody else online that wishes to testify? Is there anybody here in the audience that would like to make any comments? I suspected when you walked in, you might, so please come on up. And
yeah, wear my badge of honor. My name is Mary Brown. I'm a Tlingit dog salmon and woodworm. And I'm a daughter of a Coast Guardsman and a sister of Army and Marines who some served during the Vietnam War. Proud mother of a son who served in the Desert Storm War. And when I received the phone call about this resolution and that there was testimonies to be given today, I strongly felt that I needed to come and share my feelings about this. I'm only one of many, many moms in Alaska who had a son or daughter serving during the Desert Storm War. And we watched the news, we watched CNN every day, and prayed for the peace talks to work. I was at a conference in Kluak, where I'm from, when I got the phone call that the peace talks didn't work and the war was started. And of course, as mom, I fell apart. When I sat in front of that TV almost 24 hours a day, they had to take me to the clinic and get me a shot to relax my body because I was, you know, then somebody said, you know, you just watch the TV once a day for an hour because it's all repetitive news. But I always watched in case I could see my son. And then I took that advice, then got a phone call and somebody said, your son's 6'4", right? And I said, yeah. Well, we made him laugh. And so there I was again in front of the TV. Then we got a phone call. My son called. He stood in that line for 4 hours in order to call me and let me know that he was still alive. Then we were, unfortunately for Washington, D.C., they gave me a phone number. Said I could call once a day because the troop leader called in and let them know what the morale was of the troops. And that was really good because I could go to bed knowing that my son was still okay. And then one day the nightmare started. I got put on hold. Then I got transferred. The fourth transfer they put me on was to the casualty line. By that time, I was sitting there with tears coming down my face and numb. And when they finally came back on and said, well, your son's not on the list, I was relieved, but then I got angry. At that time, we were going through the friendly fire. My son was a tanker. I asked him, how in the world did they fit you into that tank? Because he's 6'4". They told me that George Bush's son was also serving. And in my anger, I said, well, he better be standing in front of my son and protecting him. So, on behalf of all the other Alaska Native moms, I hope that this monument is put up. I would just really love to see something in Alaska that we can go to and pay our respects to those that we lost and to honor those that are still with us that made it home safely. I thank you for this opportunity to be able to stand here in front of you. I am Alaska Native Sisterhood from Kluwak Camp 9, but I'm also a past Grand President of the Alaska Native Sisterhood. So I belong to the Alaska Native Sisterhood Committee. And I wish you a lot of luck, and I hope to see a lot more things happening for our people here in the state of Alaska. They deserve that recognition. I will always honor our veteran and our living military. Gunish Chish, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Brown. I'm sure glad you made it here. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the audience? One last pass for folks that are online. With gratitude for those who came before us and spoke both here and from a distance, we'll close public testimony. We've already talked about the fiscal note. Does anybody have any amendments for this measure? Senator Wilikowski, would you like the honors?
Yes, please, Mr. Sponsor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Senate Joint Resolution Number 7 out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection? So the bill is moved from committee as noted in the motion. If there's anything else to come before the committee? And thank you again for the powerful public testimony. With that, we will stand in adjournment.